Hey guys, I'm Chris.
Hey everybody, I'm Robert.
And we're the Film Flamers.
And per tradition, at the start of every month, we are here to shoot the flames.
That's right. This is where we go over all of your comments and questions and bring you all the latest horror news and trailers.
That's right.
But first,
can we talk about Madonna?
I guess.
I mean,
I always have time to talk about Madonna.
Bitch, she's Madonna.
Please stop.
I know. Stop right now.
Oh, I wasn't talking to you.
Oh, you were talking to her?
Yeah.
So Chris and I had the pleasure of seeing Madonna live in concert. Her celebration tour stop here in Dallas. First of two nights, actually. And thanks to my friend, we had the most amazing seats and got to see the spectacle of the celebration tour up close, for better or for worse, right? I don't know. How did you feel about the performance?
It was all right. You know, I thought to myself, am I a better or a bigger Madonna fan now than before? No. Am I a little bit worse? Less of a fan? Maybe. I don't know. She seemed like, I don't know. She kept kind of talking to the audience like, you know, that's part of her whole thing though, right? Is like just her attitude.
Because bitch, she's Madonna.
Yeah, bitch, I'm Madonna, blah, blah, blah. Don't make me repeat myself. She's kind of jokey about it, tongue in cheek a little bit, but she's always kind of a bitch with a tongue in a cheek.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's kind of what it is. But she was also 2 hours late, you know?
She was incredibly late.
Yeah.
Unspeakably late.
And we knew that going in, so it didn't really bother us. You know, we ourselves didn't show up till, you know, an hour and a half after the doors open, right? And so, I don't know, like, the sound also, the venue, just wasn't doing her any favors.
So
this is not a venue meant for, you know, really good music or, you know, concerts, I guess.
It's really not.
Like a sports arena, maybe.
For those of you who are familiar with Dallas, like the AAC, American Airlines Center, is where the Mavericks and the Stars play. And this is an arena that was built for sports. And yet they continue to have concerts there. And it's just not great for musical sound.
Yeah, it's not. And it was very muddy and very low and high. There was no mid-range at all. Anyway, I'm kind of an audiophile and like I'm not a big concert person anyway.
Yeah.
Unless it's really like live band music, right? And I really do enjoy going to like the symphony.
Yeah.
For sure. Which is why like the best venues are like the Meyerson in Dallas or Bass Hall in Fort Worth, you know? So I don't know.
I will say though, bitch can put on a good show.
She can. There was a lot of like, there was a lot more interpretive dance than I thought there was going to be.
It was a spectacle. More, like,
you know, just like her career in music versus like her life through music.
Yeah.
You know, and it seemed like she was just really kind of full of herself a little bit. You know, it seemed kind of exploitative a little bit in hindsight. She had like this moment about AIDS, and then she also had a moment at the end of when we were leaving with Michael Jackson, and she put a bunch of photos of her and Michael Jackson when they knew each other for about 10 minutes.
Right. They dated briefly or something.
Michael Jackson, they went on one date to the Oscars 1 year.
Or something like that.
And, you know,
and the next year
Michael
took
Jackson
a monkey.
Did not like her.
Shocking.
You know, and she was much more provocative than he was and everything in certain ways. And,
yeah.
Anyway, so it kind of seemed exploitative. And then, of course, we missed the best part.
Yes. So, to be fair, like, throughout the night, she was kind of a hot mess. Like, there were moments when she was speaking, and I was like, she's got to be drunk. I mean, she's, like, moments away from, like, talking about a Carvana heist. And she was holding a beer bottle, you know? And she was like, there's no beer in here. It's just water. And I'm like, sure, Jan. But I don't know. And then toward the end of the night, and we had walked out at this point, so Chris sent me a video the following day. Do you want to comment on what you sent me?
Yeah. So it's just the last little bit of the Michael Jackson thing. And then she did Bitch on Madonna as an encore, right? I guess. And we don't care about that song. And we're all about 80s and 90s Madonna.
Yes.
And so, and maybe a little bit of 2000 sprinkled in for flavor. A little bit of Confessions on a Dance Floor here and there. It's great. You know, which she did very little of. But anyway, so she's at the end. She has this, some sort of veil that I guess she's supposed to do something with. And so she flips it forward and just covers her face. And then she's trying to, like, get it out of her face again. And that's the end of the show. She's, like, dropping down to the stage. She's like, placed properly, at least. But she cannot get this veil out in front of her face. And so the last thing she does before the lights go out and then, like, this concert is over after the encore. And she goes, God damn it.
I feel like
that's it.
You totally missed the best part. You know, it was like the final culmination. And what I thought was like, I don't know. I feel like we witnessed a farewell tour without even being called that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like this was like her last hurrah, her goodbye kind of thing. And it's a really big tour for her. It's supposed to be career spanning. And like, I feel like some of the choices she made in like song, you know, she could have done better, you know, to be fair. If you're never going to tour again, yeah. She probably won't.
You can like, tell that her first love, kind of like Lady Gaga's first love was acting.
Yeah.
Madonna's first love was dance.
Yes.
You can definitely tell that.
Yeah.
You know, and she also said like the most controversial thing she ever did was stick around. Right. And so just like, it's kind of a fuck you to everyone that was being like, she's too old for this. There was like funny videos going around where showing her dancing in place, kind of like yep. giving her like the most movement she can do, but the least draining thing, mm-hmm. you know? And it just, this is elder abuse. Stop it. You know, or whatever. Like we laugh at that, but at the same time, she's right. You know, she stuck around. She never just got out of the limelight. You know, she doesn't care.
Props to her for being 65 years old and going out on this kind of a tour. And it was a 2.5 hour show, you know, and she was working the whole damn time.
Yeah, there was not like an intermission or anything like that.
Right.
She didn't have like a full 5 minute break or anything.
Nope. She was out there and she was doing it, you know, but like I will never forget this experience. I will always be completely grateful that we got to go and like see this because it seems like a once in a lifetime kind of thing.
But only like as a like checking off a box, you know? Because it's like I don't know. I wish that I'd seen her like on the Drowned World tour instead.
Yeah.
You know, like her at her prime, you know, after some of the best music she'd ever came out with. You know, Ray of Light and Music, you know, were great, just like crescendos of her career.
See, but that would have been like a good show to go and see and experience, right? Like musically and performatively. And I feel like this was a really fun show,
I guess.
Yeah, maybe not for the right reason sometimes.
Fire and dancers were like tits out and you know.
Yeah, there was titties for sure. Yeah,
there was some bare ass and
there was all the things.
Anyway, we've been talking about this for like 10 minutes.
I know. Anyway, we saw Madonna, y'all. We are true gays.
Yeah. Well, I mean, segueing into something else that's super gay and exciting is we actually have like, we have no voicemails. It's like we traded our currency of voicemails for a currency of reviews.
That's right.
So yeah. Instead of three voicemails last month, we have like three reviews this month.
That's right. We've been getting like maybe one review a month, like sort of peppered in there. And this month we have three.
Yeah.
And the first one comes from Seymour Loves Audrey. And they say, horror honored honestly. Robert and Chris really care about horror movies and honor them in the best way through this podcast. I love their approach to analyzing the themes, not tearing apart the movies to make themselves look superior, and introducing us to the horror gems. Chris always has great trivia about each movie. Robert's laugh is infectious, thank you, entertaining, both a horror connoisseurs and casual horror watchers podcast.
Oh, that's such a nice review.
We're for the masses.
Oh. Seymour does love Audrey.
Feed me.
Nonsense 2409 said, best horror movie podcast around. Found these guys a while back while searching for a good discussion on the Alien franchise. I recently saw the new trailer for Alien Romulus and immediately wished I could ask Chris and Robert how they felt about it. So I figured it was time for a review. And stay tuned. We do talk about that this episode, actually.
That's right.
This is by far the highest quality horror movie podcast I have come across. Chris and Robert are two of the most hilarious and insightful hosts I have listened to. They helped reinvigorate my love for the genre and introduced me to new terms that helped me better understand why I fell in love with horror in the first place. Terms like horror ghetto, gateway horror, horror adjacency, etc. In addition to all the great horror discussion, these two take a lot of time to listen and connect with their community. Chris and Robert have done a great job building an awesome community of people who genuinely have insightful and sometimes hilarious things to say. All in all, the Film Flamers are a great choice if you're looking for any of these things mentioned above. You will not be disappointed.
Oh, thank you, Nonsense.
That was a long and amazing review. I love that.
That really, really is. And stay tuned because we are going to be talking about the Romulus trailer because we've been talking about this movie for quite some time and have been waiting for that preview.
Well, I also love validation when they mention things like horror ghetto, gateway horror, horror adjacency. It means people really are kind of getting the message.
That's right.
Which I love.
This is kind of what our podcast is based around. Yeah. I mean, we use those terms on almost every single episode that we have.
Yeah. So. It's like our podcast really has like the overall arching theme over the last 5 years has really been about what is horror, you know?
Exactly.
And I love that.
We got a review from Julia 90 Allison, and she left this on Australia iTunes. So down under. And she says, this is the hottest man in all of horror podcasts. She says, look, I don't want to dog on other podcasts just to bring this one up, but I will. No one recommended me the Film Flamers. Instead of doing my duties to my capitalist overlords, I was clicking on every horror movie podcast and giving them 45 seconds of my precious time. The 15-second jump button was used very lubricantly. I was dismayed to find Dude Bro yelling introduction after introduction. An aneurysm was imminent. My heart ached for a simple introduction. Just your names and what you plan to talk about, please.
Of course, this is the episode where we start talking about Madonna for 10 minutes.
No. God. Well, to be fair, we introduced ourselves. Okay. Was this too much to ask for? Did my heart yearn for something that was impossible? Like a Hinge date with a man who did not want to tell me his crypto plans while asking what I paid in rent. Was I asking too much? And then the clouds parted and sun shone through the industrial musty windows of Melbourne into my work desk. The Microsoft dingling of a new email suddenly sounded like music to my ears. I could return to my work. And for that day, I did not hate myself for being a cog in the machine. I had found Chris and Robert. Thank you for the many laughs, joys, and insights you've brought into my daily commute, cooking in the kitchen with a screaming Devin Rex. Yes, I have one too, yes. She says. Oh my God. And pushing through the slog of a workday, I found myself watching horror movies I had never intended to see or had left lingering on my watch list for years so that I could listen to your deep dives. As an avid soundtrack lover, I find your attention to this aspect of movies fabulous. I had no idea the Ring soundtrack was good. Perhaps when 12-year-old me watched it, the horror shook me too much to pay attention to something else. Thank you again from a bi and cat loving queer heart.
Oh my God, I love that review. All the fucking reviews today
are good. Amazing. Right?
Yeah.
I feel like especially that one should hold a special place in your heart due to the Devin Rexes and the soundtracks and so on and so forth. I feel like you and Allison could be besties.
Yes, but am I the hottest man in all of horror podcasts or are you the hottest man?
The podcast itself is the hottest man in all of horror podcasts.
Oh.
It's a communicative thing. Oh. Wait, that sounds like an STD. It's a... Yeah. That review was amazing, Julia. Thank you so much. And I know that you are a patron, so we really appreciate that. And we appreciate all these reviews, guys. We are inching ever closer to 100 reviews over on iTunes. And
yeah, then we need 12 more.
Yep. You don't even have to leave a written one. You can just click the star ratings in order for us to get that. So head over to Apple Podcasts or iTunes, leave us that 5-star review. And if you want to, leave us a written one and we'll read it on the next Shooting the Flames.
That's right. And you can also review us anywhere else you have access to, like Spotify. That really helps us out as well.
That's right.
The only thing that's this tall to ride type of situation is for the Rotten Tomatoes reviews. Uh-huh. Right. And so if we ever want to be Rotten Tomatoes reviewers, apparently their rules are 100 reviews or ratings that are 4 stars or above. And we are, of course, like 4.8.
That's right. Yeah. We could be a little higher, but that's
maybe a little higher, guys.
We don't want to like beg too much. Right?
I think we're even lower on Spotify. I think we're like 4.7.
Really? 0.1 lower?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous, mm-hmm. I say.
Yeah. Probably because we talk about Madonna for the first 10 minutes of a horror podcast.
Depending on how lubricantly people are using that 15-second jump button.
Let's talk about horror. Away with this gay shit. The Bodyguard.
We did do an episode of The Bodyguard.
On our deep dive of The Bodyguard, Bennett over on Patreon said, I finally watched this blockbuster for the first time tonight.
What?
Mostly because it's one of my boss's favorite movies and I realized I'd still missed out on it. It definitely has early 90s romantic thriller vibes, though I don't think it really balanced the two tones very well. You're right. For all of its shortcomings, Whitney Houston's music is what catapulted this box office success. What I can't get over is how confused I felt when we learned the twist about her sister. Many thrillers of this sort often reveal some kind of a twist like that, but for some reason, I couldn't buy it. Jealousy is one thing, but that is a whole other level. P.S. you're right that the Oscars didn't take place at what has now been renamed the Dolby Theater, formerly the Kodak Theater. You want to know why? Because it wasn't even built back then. Up until the early 2000s, the Oscars primarily took place at the Shrine Auditorium in downtown LA, just on the street from USC, my alma mater. During my college days, it was still being used to host other famous award shows like the Emmys and the Latin Grammys. PPS, I can never grasp Hollywood movies with scenes that take place in the Oscars. It never plays well. Never.
I think it played okay in this. What I'm most flabbergasted about this comment is that, Bennett, this is the first time you've seen The Bodyguard? Really? Okay. I mean, I guess some people are still discovering it, but I feel like you of all people should have seen this movie by now.
Don't you dare.
Don't you dare walk away from The Bodyguard. Actually, I forgot that they had that Oscars moment in this movie.
Yeah, it's the ending scene. whatever action piece.
That character, Rachel, was nominated for some kind of an Oscar.
That was the least thing. Like, really? I don't think her name's Rachel.
I think it is.
No, it is. It is Rachel in the movie. I'm just like, I never believed it.
Oh, that Whitney Houston's name was Rachel, the way she looked or whatever? Yeah. I mean, like, yeah. Well, the fact that that person was nominated for any kind of award, I don't know. I still love The Bodyguard, though. I'm glad you watched it. And that will always be one of my favorite Film Flamers episodes.
Rachel just seems so Jewish. Anyway.
We got a comment on our bonus episode covering Black Christmas, the 2019 version.
The second remake?
Yeah, the second remake. Bonnie J said, this movie just always reminds me of that frat episode of Buffy. Pretty much the same message, but also a nice phallic lizard snake demon to really drive the point home, Whedon style.
That's a good point, Bonnie. And also, it's probably one of the few Buffy episodes I always feel comfortable skipping.
Yes, amen. I do not care for that episode. Actually, that season is kind of hit or miss.
So, from our bonus episode into Running Man, Bennett said, I rewatched this around the time Hunger Games movie started and thought it was a little ahead of the curve, despite it being so silly. The most memorable scene for me is the fake recording of Arnold and Jesse Ventura battling each other, where we get the surreal spectacle of two future governors duking it out. No film critics in the 80s could have seen that coming.
Nope. Although I feel like we talked about that while watching the movie. Yeah. Did we not? The most amazing deepfake.
Maybe that's how our voting should go in the future for democracy.
I fully support that.
Biden versus Trump.
We'll just see who like wins.
Nobody wins. Everybody loses.
I mean, they both die. We all win. Come on. Jesus Christ. From our deep dive into It Follows, Mac Daddy over on Spotify said, so glad you two brought up the Dostoevsky quote to inform the idea that it is death itself. I had always viewed it as a literal metaphor for sexual assault, but I love and agree with your interpretation.
Thank you. I think our deep dive into It Follows is particularly good for analyzation of the themes, getting a little bit deeper than that surface level. I think that's one of the very few movies that actually has that symbolism. And then that symbolism is almost like a red herring itself for a deeper symbolism. And I love that about It Follows.
I really love when we cover movies that we can really dive into themes and stuff with. You know what I mean? It's like my favorite time here on the podcast. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and that was particularly fun.
Titan 1096 over on Spotify said, so what do you guys think of that supposed sequel? They follow the family of STDs running rampant in Detroit. We talked about this a little bit in the episode, right? And I feel like we're okay with it as long as they don't try and like double deep dive into the mythology of the thing. As long as they like get to the next point of the theme itself, which is about death or, you know, the next stage of life for her was loss of innocence. Maybe this is about getting older. You know, maybe they should wait another 20 years for that to happen anyway. I don't know.
I mean, it's going to happen. And I feel like there's been a good chunk of time since the release of this movie. And I'm also a little bit, I feel more safe with it knowing that it's the same writer, director, and like actor, you know, like that brings a little something to it. But trepidatiously waiting for it, I guess.
Trepidatious.
Boucheron. T-Fulla89 over on Spotify said, I liked your discussion on It Follows more than the movie. I'll have to rewatch. I remember as a kid loving the soundtrack to Valentine. Enjoy. Well,
we did.
You need to go over to Patreon, T-Fulla89, and listen to our episode on Valentine because we talk about that soundtrack a lot.
We do.
During that episode.
From our posting about a poll or our poll post itself. I don't know. Poll post. seems redundant. About which bonus zombie movie we were going to cover. Penelope said, I was really tempted to pick Dead Snow, but I wouldn't do that to y'all. I've never seen it.
I've seen it. And I'm glad that you didn't choose it.
Okay. As promised, back in our bonus episode last month, there is a drinking game for Wild Zero, and William Skinner is here to share it with us. Wild Zero is fun. You should play the drinking game off the DVD. You have to drink every time, one, someone combs their hair, two, flames shoot out of something, three, someone says or yells rock and roll, four, someone drinks, five, explosion, six, a head explodes. Trust me when I say you should watch this together and sip or you'll die.
I feel like we will die because we're sipping, actually, but I'm totally down for this. Y'all, I cannot wait to watch this movie. I have got to see it. It looks like fun. We were looking for the right time to put this in a poll or somewhere, and it wasn't chosen. So
it wasn't, but we're also kind of glad because it wasn't streaming anywhere. You have to buy the DVD to watch it, and we didn't really want to do that to everyone. So, but we bought it anyway, and we're going to watch it soon.
And I feel like maybe once we watch it, it might just move into deep dive territory.
Yeah.
So why not? From our Shooting the Flames episode last month in March, Nikki over on Patreon commented, creepypasta, backrooms, I must have missed a lot, LOL. Gonna rewatch. And I love both those disaster movies. I can't wait.
Yeah, I think she's talking about our upcoming blockbuster summer disaster movies.
Yeah, we're doing Twister and Backdraft.
Mm-hmm.
So I also love both those disaster movies. Can't wait to talk about it. And I assume she's also talking about The Oldest View.
The Oldest View, I'm sure. Yeah.
Okay. Go back and rewatch anyway. I've seen it several many times now, and I keep appreciating that movie more and more on each rewatch. Yeah.
From our deep dive into the Night of Living Dead remake from 1990, Costa Spartan on YouTube said, quote, this remake of the film is better than the original and all the other Living Dead, etc. movies that were made after. I think this person's a troll.
I am going to save my comments because I feel like I might literally slap.
Well, you've commented enough just by saying that. Yeah. Let's answer it by reading the next comment, shall we?
That's right.
Ryan King over on Patreon said, "Aw, man, I'm sad you queens didn't like this one as much. However, I understand the argument. I suppose I need to watch the original as this was the film I watched first. Time to grab the popcorn and watch the OG. Thank you for doing a deep dive into one of my favorites." Right. And so we responded to this on Patreon and said we didn't hate it, right? We actually like this movie. It's shockingly good for what it is, right? Which is kind of like a shot-for-shot remake with a little bit of modernization, for better or worse, mostly worse, right? So we kind of rated it middle of the road or a little higher, right? And so like I said, we didn't hate it. And so, but we also don't think it's better than the original. The original is, you know, like a top 10 classic. It's Robert's number one favorite movie, period. Yeah. And so to say that this is better and then all, of course, better than all of the sequels as well is, I feel like, as close to objectively false when it comes to people's opinions as possible. That's why I think this person's a troll.
That's possible. And also, like, to each their own. You know what I mean? Like, this movie is not terrible. Like you said, like it's a watchable horror movie. But compared to the Shakespearean levels of horror that George Romero gave us in the original Night of the Living Dead, I mean, come on.
I might not go that far, but
I certainly will. I will die on that hill. Battle Burrito over on Patreon said, "The synopsis really made me feel like I was watching the movie."
You're welcome.
It was. Was very
some of my favorite ones.
Very descriptive and really drove the point home.
We can do that more often. No. Every time a character dies, just like describe it three different ways.
For sure.
Rosie Red Leader over on Patreon said, "But we need to know, would you consider recommending this version over the original if the cast were the Muppets?"
Yes.
Yes, we would. And I think I responded, "That's no fair. You know us too well."
That's exactly what you said. Because I was going to respond something and I was like, "Oh, Chris already did." And I was like, "Yeah, he's right." That sums it up. Yep. From our deep dive into Cargo, Julia 90 Allison over on Patreon said, "I was hoping this film would embrace the elements of Australia to make the zombie genre new. So many zombie films that come to mind are Cold, Dark and Wet, The Ending of 28 Days, The Road, The Last of Us. So I was hoping some Mad Max or the Rover elements would make it into the film, but it did not. The boathouse is unique, except I've never seen a boathouse in Australia before. And what river do we even have that's long enough to travel along long and survive summer, LOL. For real, they must be trolling up and down the same 12 kilometers of river. Here's the west bank of the Swan River again. Same rock, same trees. Cool, moving on. The ending concept was the only unique part, and that was the main element from the short movie, so the entire film was just passing for that. I enjoyed seeing the success of the Aboriginal people thriving, but also felt that needed to be tied into Martin's character goals.
Right.
Also, token bad guy was bad, like comically evil stinky man. The Drover is an interesting slow horror adjacent Australian road trip film that I recommend over this. Didn't hate it, but didn't love it enough to recommend it to anyone. Also, no one called anyone a cunt. And wasn't Australian even involved in the writing? So,
yeah, it's like their version of bro, apparently.
I think I've planned out our trip to Australia now, and we have to do it. We're just going to rent a houseboat, travel up and down the same kilometers of river, and just call people cunt.
So, Allison, you can join us.
Please come, Allison. I think that would be delightful. We'll bring drinks. I totally agree with everything that you said in this comment. Right. Like,
me too.
You really nailed, I think, how Chris and I felt about this movie. And I think that we went into it with kind of high expectations. And that alone should be enough to make us stop having expectations about movies. But we're peoples.
Yeah.
So.
We have some questions and such.
We do?
Yeah. So Call Me Lestat sent us an email and said, gentlemen, one day, perhaps, you could include Coraline in your discussions of horror adjacency. My apologies if you've already done this. No, I think we would continue that probably in our continuation of the polls and or deep dives of Gateway Horror Months that we do, I think, every, what, November now?
We have. There was some talk of maybe skipping Gateway Horror this year in November, but I don't think that we've gotten that far in the docket yet.
We'll eventually get Coraline, trust me.
I've never seen it.
Okay. It's the creepiest animation movie that you'll ever see, partially because it's not trying to be horror like Monster House or something would be, right?
Right.
Right. So I don't know, in a way it might be, but it's very Tim Burton-y, but I don't know, less playful. I don't know.
Okay. I've only heard good things about Coraline.
It's creepy. It's legitimately creepy, like Nightmare Fuel.
Okay. Well, let me open up this drink and plan on adding Coraline to our docket at some point. We also got an email from Sinistero, and they say, dear Tired Queens, I have been listening to you faithfully since mid to late 2022. The Hellraiser redo was due to come out, and I was so hype about that movie. I know, hindsight is 2020, or in this point, 2022. Since I was talking about all things Hellraiser with friends online, a friend of mine from abroad recommended your podcast. She had just listened to your review of the original Hellraiser and thought you guys really nailed what she was looking for in a horror podcast, though she had tried others before. Your show was the first one that clicked due to being both funny and insightful. I gave you guys a try and listened to that specific episode, even though I'm not the biggest podcast person. My friend was right. I was hooked. Hooked, I say. Since then, I have mostly caught up on the back episodes and keep up with new ones. You have caused me to rewatch movies I have actively disliked and turned me around on them. I've also watched a ton of movies I probably wouldn't have been aware of because of you guys. Your hilarious banter and the queer lens you bring to horror keep me coming back. I am currently working on watching all of your top 10 picks for 2023. I just saw Cues last night and loved it. Too real. Too real. Love The Oldest View as well. You guys are the best thing to happen to Mondays in a long time. Josh.
Oh,
that's a really good email.
Yeah, it's almost like a review. Mm-hmm. Love it. Also, I feel like his friend must be Allison, right? Because we were talking about our ticket giveaways for The Overlook, right? And I think she said Sinistero could come as well, maybe. So I would really like to know, I think Sinistero is in the U.S. maybe. And Allison obviously is in Australia, and I would love to know how you guys know each other.
That's kind of amazing, too, because they're both patrons, right? Yeah. And they seem to converse online. I love that. We have a chat over on Patreon.
Mm-hmm. So on the app, yeah.
That's right. So that's kind of amazing that we have like two online friends who are fans of our podcast and send us the most amazing things.
Yeah.
So
speaking of two fans of our podcast, we have two new patrons.
We do.
Right. So this is Killscape.
And Julia Allerson.
Yeah. So. Who has commented and also given us a review, I believe.
That's right.
In this very episode.
Thank you guys both for joining the Patreon family. But as always, we have to shout out the patrons at the Film Flamer tier or higher. And at the Film Inferno level, our highest level, we have Comulistat,
Kimberly,
and Penelope.
And at the Film Flamers tier, we got Anthony,
Ashley,
Ben,
Big Dave,
Glazed Donut,
Hi Glazed Donut, Jessica,
Lisa,
Nikki,
Rosie Red Leader,
Sinisthero,
Wallstrich,
and William Skinner.
But especially, let's say Sinisthero.
Yeah, that was a really good email. I really appreciate that. It was very heartfelt. And it makes me happy that you're not a podcast person, but listen to our podcast. Like that is the highest praise of all.
Right.
Horror news.
All right. I was going back through all the news, like items there were back in March, trying to like see the ones that I liked the most. And one of the ones that I liked was that Night of the Hunter is being remade again, or at least another adaptation of the novel. And this time Scott Derrickson is going to be producing and directing the film.
Which is interesting because I think I just saw a YouTube video recently with psychologists rating thrillers and horror movies about like which ones were the most realistic depictions of psychosis and psychos. And Night of the Hunter, I think, was their number one.
This is like a really prime example of really good classic horror adjacent stuff. Yeah. Like this is a classic film with Robert Mitchum in it. And it like some of the imagery in that movie is just like present all the time. It's made itself into pop culture. In fact, when I look at movies from that time period from the 1950s and 60s that we might cover on this podcast, because we haven't done a whole bunch of that stuff, this oftentimes pops into my head. Like this is like quintessential horror adjacency. Yeah. And I'm really excited to see what Scott Derrickson will do with this material, because the novel is also really, really good and very, very tense.
And for those of you that are not familiar, Scott Derrickson also did The Exorcism of Emily Rose, which I love. And I feel like if there's any other like courtroom drama horror, which is real niche,
yeah,
that we have to cover or do like a double deep dive 1 month, because I'm dying to watch that movie again.
Same.
And then he also directed Sinister, which some people say is like the, I think like scientifically, like the scariest movie just because of people's heart rates or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That and like The Exorcist, maybe.
I think it's fucking terrifying.
It is. Yeah. Except for the stupid ending. And then he also did more recently Doctor Strange, which was very, you know, they kept his horror beats in the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
And then with Sam Raimi. And then he more recently did The Black Phone, which we both thought was, you know, them phoning in horror, but it ended up being super fucking good.
That's right. We saw that our first year that we went to the Overlook, right, and we walked out of that theater just like singing its praises.
Yeah. It's a really, really good example of when a movie doesn't necessarily do anything original, but it does it so well.
Yep.
That it becomes like the best or one of the best examples of that type of story. And so that's definitely something. So he is a very competent, opinionated, visionary director. And I love all of his work.
And same, like we haven't deep dove any of his movies yet, but I feel like you're right. Like Emily Rose, I feel like a lot of people sleep on. It's a really, really good movie. And if he's tackling like this horror, this type of like horror adjacency, and it's another type of horror adjacency that puts children in harm, like The Black Phone. So like I'm really interested to see what he does with it.
Yeah, and I'm Emily Rose in a way too.
It very, very much. And Sinister, kind of, you know? So I mean he really found his like horror niche and is running with it. And I kind of like him. He makes like blockbustery type movies. Like none of this is very independent, you know?
Or like, stuff that feels like it could be blockbuster, but it's not, you know?
Right.
So yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. And maybe that's all we need, you know, for a theme is really just Scott Derrickson.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Docket it up.
Next up, we've got Little Shop of Halloween Horrors, which is a new horror movie written by the Gremlins 2 writer and directed by none other than horror and movie legend Joe Dante.
That's right. So he is remaking yet again Little Shop of Horrors, right? But I think that he's tackling this from the angle of the original Roger Corman film, right? So the Jack Nicholson movie and not the musical,
which I've never seen.
I've seen it, right? But obviously, like my little gay self loves the musical so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think for years now, we've been talking about people trying to remake the musical version and no one sort of like tackling the original film. So I don't know. I love Joe Dante, and I like the story as well. So I'm kind of interested to see what he does. I'm hoping that maybe, surprisingly, it is the musical, you know?
Yeah.
Because I feel like he would really do some really good campy things with that, especially if we're talking about the writer of Gremlins too, because that movie is like pure fucking camp and comedy, right? So I feel like this pairing is really, really good.
Yeah.
So I say bring it on, right? Although, a couple years ago, they talked about Lady Gaga playing the Audrey part, right, in a movie remake, and I still want that to happen.
Mm.
I just really do. So, come on, Joe Dante, make this movie. It's been a while since you had something.
All right.
Next up, Wolf Night is a movie from director Jonathan Liebsman, and it finds a home at Screen Gems.
Right. And so, you know, what's interesting is that I've never been the biggest fan of werewolf movies. I feel like we got some early good ones.
Yeah,
like American Werewolf in Paris. That's basically it. And then maybe I haven't seen Company of Wolves. Or did I?
Yeah.
Company of Wolves, that was the one. Okay. What did I not see? Brotherhood of Wolves. What Brotherhood of the Wolf?
Yeah, I haven't seen Brotherhood of the Wolf.
I haven't seen that one. But anyway, I generally don't like werewolf movies, right? Except recently we've gotten some really good ones, right? So we got Werewolf by Night.
Which was good.
Over on Disney Plus, which is amazing. Watch the black and white original version, by the way. Then we also got this like Whodunit based on that VR video game or whatever.
Which is so good. I loved that called. Movie. I can't remember it either, but it was so good.
Werewolves Within.
Werewolves Within. Yes, that movie was fucking amazing and hilarious.
Scary and funny.
All of it.
Wonderful. Wonderfully entertaining. Anyway, so those are some recent horror, you know, like it's like all of a sudden people are looking at like the genre, the subgenre, and like deciding what's the best things and like pulling that out. And it's making it like the almost like the werewolf stuff being or the mythology of it being like kind of layered in and not as important, which is great, right? And so this is a director that has also done some other interesting movies that people love and hate, which is Darkness Falls, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning from 2006, Battle Los Angeles, Wrath of the Titans from 2012, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 2014. Of those, I like Darkness Falls the most.
Of those.
He said it was like the most studio meddling he has ever experienced, but it has a really good like beginning. And I love that monster. I wish we'd gotten sequels to it. I still want to deep dive Darkness Falls.
I've only seen two of these movies, Darkness Falls being one. And I also like Darkness Falls.
Wrath of the Titans was good.
I haven't seen that one. I've seen
Battle Los Angeles was overwrought. Didn't like it.
I didn't watch that. But I also really dislike werewolf movies. I think we talk about that in the few times that we've done a werewolf deep dive, right? So we've done like The Howling, right? We haven't done American Werewolf in London yet, but we will eventually. Yeah. We have to.
We got to.
Maybe we can do that with
Werewolves Within.
Right.
Because American Werewolf in London is kind of has some comedy beats.
Yeah, sure. Very, very much. But then on the flip side of that, like we watched a movie last year at Overlook, a werewolf movie that was really not good.
It was so not about being a werewolf that it almost doubled back into being bad again. So
yeah, it was more about being a lesbian.
Yeah,
which is fine, you know. But there's another werewolf movie at Overlook this year that kind of looks more interesting. And so, like, I don't know, it's a fucking coin toss with these werewolf movies, but they seem to be a lot more prevalent now. There was a whole TV show about being a parent in a werewolf that was recently on some streaming service. Like, there's a lot more werewolf movies than there used to be. I feel like the zombie genre is making its way out. Vampires kind of haven't made its way back in, but werewolves are kind of like stealing the show these days. They're all everywhere. So I don't know, maybe this one will be good.
I have to say the worst werewolf I've ever seen is fucking Buffy's werewolf. So bad.
What?
Straight up horrible.
You're talking about Oz?
Yeah. Like a literally like a $20 monkey costume or something.
For real though. They really phoned that in. They weeded that the hell out.
Coming soon.
So we have a series of trailers to talk about, far more than our news items. And the first one is a series over on Amazon Prime that's coming out in April, and it is called Fallout.
Right. This is based on the video game series, beloved video game series. And I was looking, is this a movie? Is this a series? It's actually a series, and it's coming out this April, this month on Amazon Prime, and it looks really good.
It actually looks really delightful.
Yeah, it looks very like horror adjacent, action-y drama, like kind of Cross Between Silo, and a little bit of the trailer that we watched last month, which is another video game that Eli Roth is doing, Borderlands, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Fallout looks great. I'm definitely going to check that out.
And this is a video game that I've actually heard of. I mean, I've never played it. You know what I mean? But, like, I at least know, like, the little image of that bobblehead sitting on the desk. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, I recognize that. So, like, pop culture has done its thing. And not knowing anything about the video game itself, like, this show really does look fun and funny and kind of, like, scary. And it has everything that I like in it. Like, I love apocalyptic shit. And this just seems like a really fun apocalypse show.
It does.
I feel like this is something I would be interested
in. It'll go into the pile. I need to see Last of Us, and I need to see like the Star Wars show that came out that everyone was raving about, the best Star Wars ever, maybe. And
yeah,
like, I still want to have so many things, so much TV streaming. I just have not caught up with.
I know. I need to be fucking better about television. It's just like every time
such a commitment with series, though. Yeah,
it's so hard for me to commit. You know what I mean? A movie I can watch in one sitting, a TV series takes me years to finish.
Yeah.
I need to be better at binging.
Yeah. Or at least just finishing in, you know, a couple of episodes for Interview with the Vampire or something, you know.
That's right. I'll get halfway into it.
But who's keeping track?
Who's keeping track?
I have a list of movies you never finished because you just walked away.
I mean.
No, it was too intense.
It does happen. Or sometimes I just get bored and I'm like, you know what? I gave you guys 2 hours and you still have like another hour to go. I'm like, no, thank you. I have Golden Girls.
Just for that comment, we are going to deep dive under the skin next month. No. next trailer, we've got Atlas, which is coming over on Netflix in May. And this is Jennifer
Lopez,
Selena herself from the block.
Jenny from the block.
Yeah, which is, I guess, future post-apocalyptic, future Ender's Gamey, mech warrior, survival, blood and guts, alien sci-fi, action thriller horror. Looks like they cooked a bunch of spaghetti and threw it on the wall.
And they were like, all right.
And then they've Mad Libs somehow had Jennifer Lopez in there.
So this movie has the most random casting I've ever seen. Like, Jennifer Lopez, first of all, where's she been for the last couple of years? I know she was on an Oscar shortlist a couple years ago.
She doesn't care about the genre. I mean, think about the fucking snake movie, Anaconda. And then she was in like The Cell, right? So she's good with genre.
She is.
And this is a return. This is a return to genre for her.
Yeah, but this movie looks like a worse version of the Fallout trailer that we just watched. You know what I mean? Like,
it looks like, yeah.
It's the snow version of Fallout.
It kind of reminds me of that other movie that came out, like 10,000 BC or whatever the fuck it was.
Oh, with Adam Driver?
Adam Driver, the futuristic one where like they reveal the twist in the fucking trailer.
That's right.
Like, they're actually on prehistoric Earth and he has to fight dinosaurs with his like laser beams or whatever.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And
it's Did you ever watch that?
No.
Okay. Me either. Are you going to watch Atlas?
Yeah, probably. It looks good. The effects really look good.
It really does.
And I don't have to pay shit, right? It's on Netflix. Same with Fallout. I'm already paying for Atlas Prime. I'm already paying for Netflix and Amazon Prime and, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I don't know.
Paying is half the battle.
Not for me, you know, like there are some streaming services.
For you, half the battle is staying awake.
There's some streaming services that I pay for and forget.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because apparently I'm paying for Peacock, but using your password. And I'm like, why?
It's okay. We have a spreadsheet now.
Thank God, because I'm going to have to rectify this shit. I literally watch 2 streaming services on my TV and they are Hulu and Disney Plus. And that's it. Cool. Okay. Anyway, I like Jennifer Lopez.
Late at night when I'm in a mech.
On Atlas.
Her name is Alice.
Oh, whatever. I wake up and watch the Strangers trailer, chapter 1, which is the next trailer that we're talking about. So several many Shooting the Flames episodes ago, we talked about they were going to reboot the Strangers franchise as a trilogy of films. This is after the amazing, wonderful masterpiece that is The Strangers.
This feels like more of a prequel than a reboot, but
It's the exact same story as the original movie.
God damn it.
I mean, it's a married couple or soon to be married couple are staying in a rented cabin, some sort of like remote Airbnb, and the strangers come up and they try to kill them because they're home.
I didn't realize that.
It's also directed by Rennie Harlan.
God damn it.
So, I mean, it's the same fucking movie, you know?
Let's move on. Oh, God.
But there's going to be three of them.
Yeah, right.
This is the first
like there's going to be three Exorcist movies.
Yeah, you're right. Well, no, I feel like this will probably happen. But, I mean, there are some, like, prequel-esque things. It's supposed to be, like, how the strangers became the strangers.
Basically, when all you have to do is rent out an Airbnb and get some strangers off the street to do these movies, then they're going to make millions. So.
With all that being said, I will probably go see this in the theater on opening
day. Really?
Yes, because I love The Strangers. I saw The Strangers opening day in the theater, and it changed my life. It made me terrified for
Yeah, but what about the sequel? Did you see the sequel? I thought you said it wasn't very good.
I didn't like the sequel the first time I watched it, but since I refused to watch new things and only watch things I've seen before, I watched it again, and I liked it much better on the second
one. I've only seen The Strangers once, didn't have a inkling to watch the next one, and you know what? I barely even want to see the first one again. It scared me. It bothered me.
Well, you're going to see this one with me anyway, so I will get the tickets, and that Friday night, we're going to go see it.
Bah Humbug. Okay.
Speaking of Bah Humbug,
The Crow remake with Bill Skarsgård is in theaters in June. Check our show notes for the link. Anyway.
This movie looks bad.
It doesn't look great. It looks like they went into weird stylistic direction that not many people are going to be able to kind of latch on to.
The only saving grace I think this movie has is that people who saw The Crow back in the 90s, and I was not one of them, will probably not go see this movie. So it's going to find a brand new audience of people who have probably never heard of or seen The Crow.
There's also these people on the internet that are like hating on it for the wrong reasons. They're like, you should never remade it out of respect for like the magnum opus of Brandon Lee. And I'm like, that's a weird thing to think when that franchise has already had like three or four fucking sequels.
That's right. Everybody in the world who was supposed to be an up and coming famous actor has played this character in some sort of sequel to that movie.
God.
My God. Did David Boreanaz play The Crow? I feel like he should have.
He was a bad guy in the third or fourth
one. I think we just talked about this in another episode.
The kid from Terminator 2.
Eddie Furlong?
Eddie Furlong. Was.
Okay. Well, Bill Skarsgård is serving. Who did you say in we were watching?
Hayden Christensen.
Yes. But I also see a little Eddie Furlong in that, too.
Yeah.
He's ripped, looks, though.
Like, too edgy for its own good. Like, not in a fun way. I don't know.
I mean, I'm all for violence and gore.
Like, incidentally, but dark, like Spawn or something, you know? Like, speaking of which, why can't we have a new Spawn movie?
That would be much better, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, I want a fucking R-rated Spawn movie. That's what I want. Just like the animation was back in the day.
You heard it first here, directors and writers. Go make that film.
Right.
Next up, as promised, we are going to talk about the Alien Romulus trailer. So,
yeah, that's in theaters in August. Moving on.
No. Well, we owe nonsense more than this.
It's right? Good trailer. It's obviously R-rated. Obviously gory. Obviously bloody.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously kind of dismantles everything and goes back to the original premise, which is alien on spaceship. Small cast, right? But it looks like a rehash of the first movie. And I don't know how much we can do with that. Although I'm hearing rumblings that it does have some connective tissue that bridges between things like Covenant Prometheus and Alien, right? Yeah. So it might be that bridge movie that we hoped Ridley Scott would make, and it might be a surprise to us that this is a little bit more to do with the franchise than we thought.
But, and I hope
because
so.
Because, like, honestly, if it's a standalone, you know, Alien movie that's kind of a clone of it, almost like a glorified remake, I would hate that. But also enjoy it. So I don't know what to think.
I mean, so I would definitely see this in the theater, and I'm going to. Like, I have most Alien movies. I think almost all, except for Alien 3.
Yeah.
Because I was in the womb for Alien, the first one. Anywho, this movie does seem very much like the original. And I was reading another article that says it's supposed to take place 20 years after the original. So betwixt Alien and Aliens, but also has some ties to other movies in the franchise, like you said.
Yeah, that's weird that it's 20 years after.
Yeah. I don't know.
Alien Isolation takes place 20 years after, right? So it's Ripley's daughter that goes and looks for her, right? And so
who knows?
Yeah, I don't fucking know.
This trailer doesn't give too much away, except plot wise.
More of a teaser, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, like from
the visuals, good action, alien action beats though. It shows like a bunch of facehuggers crawling on the ground.
Yep.
Great.
And some updated visuals for the franchise. And I'm here for it for that. And it does look very, very gory. And in a way that Fede Alvarez would do, you know? So I'm excited for that possibility of it. And I also just like this franchise very, very much. So, and after I shat all over Prometheus and Covenant and then came back and liked it a lot, you know what I mean? Like, I'm a little bit more
receptive,
yeah, to maybe giving things a chance, yeah. You know what I mean? So they're come on, Romulus. I guess come on, Fede. It's better be good.
Fede Alvarez. Yeah. Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
You want to say it one more time?
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
No,
Beetlejuice.
Save that for the third one, I guess. Right?
Yeah. So this second one is called Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. It's in theaters in September. And sure.
I don't know why this movie was made.
Winona Ryder looks great.
She does.
You know, we've got the Winona Ryder replacement actress who played Wednesday.
And, Jenna Ortega.
Yeah. Jenna Ortega is in this, and Michael Keaton is certainly in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's a teaser. I have no idea what it's about. Why? Obviously, it's like they're going back to that house or visiting that house or something, and the youngest daughter like discovers Beetlejuice baby, right? And it's a rehash.
I think someone's died. I think the father has died. Or Mayhaps. Something, they're all going back.
No, he's actually not dead, I think, and he is in jail or was fined.
No, I think in the film, the father character.
Has I'm died. Saying the actor. Like,
oh no, yeah, he's a pederast.
Yeah,
ooh. Yeah.
So
he wasn't allowed back on the set of Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. But I don't know. This is what I heard. Even I don't. Other than that, like what this movie's about, what they're doing there, why it was made, there are so many questions.
Well, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice is now made without godless sodomites.
And we're all the better because of it. Possibly.
What are we saying? Okay. Anyway, that's it. That's all we got.
That's a lot of trailers.
Yeah, that's enough. Six trailers.
I think that just about wraps up our conversation. Oh my God.
It's a bad segue.
I know.
Didn't know how to end it. How do we normally end this shit?
I don't know. Well, I think that's it for this iteration of Shooting the Flames. As always, we want to know what you think about the things that we've talked about. We love your comments and questions and emails. We will read them on Shooting the Flames. Find us on social media at The Film Flamers on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram.
You can email us at tiredqueens@filmflamers.com or call our hotline at 972-666-7733.
Put your atlas in my bunker. Fall out in my bunker.
Fall in my bunker. I love it when the strangers fall out in my bunker.
Feed me a Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
The juice is loose. Okay.
We have a lot more content coming out for you this month. As always, it's comedy month. April Fools, and we are doing more zombies. So finally covering Return of the Living Dead.
That's right. And I think that's kind of what all we've got for you this month besides our reporting on the Overlook Film Festival, right? So we're going to go over all of those films, the best and the worst, and what to look forward to from the Overlook. And then over on Patreon, we're going to tackle Return of the Living Dead Part 2.
That's right. It's that time of year again where we head to the Overlook. We're looking forward to it and can't wait to talk about all the movies that we watch and tell you what to look forward to in the upcoming months and possibly years, because one of the movies we watched at Overlook last year has just been released, like last week.
Yeah, finally.
Yeah, so... like we said earlier, head over to patreon.com/thefilmflamers. Join the family. We'll read your name on the next Shooting the Flames. And we need more reviews. Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or anywhere you could review us, actually. We'll read that on the next Shooting the Flames as well.
Well, Robert.
Yes, Chris.
I think it's time for me to get some
return to the actual dead. Time to have some crow carry your soul off to slumber.
Yes.
and have some sweet dreams. He really does look ripped in that trailer.
Yeah.
Not really ripped, like toned, I guess. Yeah. I was shocked. Shocked, I say.
Yeah.
Yeah.